Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. A few minutes past 4 p.m. So one of my good friends is Brian McKenna, who you guys all know from radio and television and sports coverage. He joined us now in studio. Good to see you.
Glub, happy to be here.
Always great.
Wheels. Where's Andrew?
Andrew is off.
Okay.
Yeah, he's off for a couple of days. So, obviously, I knew you guys knew each other, but you know each other pretty well.
We just met up in the bathroom.
We actually did.
Wow.
We had a really nice exchange in the men's room.
And I asked the question, according to man code, can we talk? Because we're right next to each other.
Sure.
If you know each other.
I think, yeah.
Yeah, that's the rule. Weirder if you don't talk, right?
Yeah, especially if you know
him. It's weirder if you don't talk.
Especially if you know the person. Now, if you don't know the person, probably best to not talk.
Now, if I don't know a guy and I want to get to know him, I usually try to talk to him in a weird puppet voice while we're going.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Probably works every time.
Yeah. I mean, something happens.
Hey, buddy.
So,
You new around here?
I'm Dave. And, God. So, an important but not funny topic that we want to talk to Brian about. Brian and I have been pals for a long time, lots in common. Unfortunately, one of those things is dealing with a parent with Alzheimer's. And you want to tell your story about your mom, and I want to hear it.
So, my mom got started with dementia. I want to say it was around 2003, 2004. So we had a family meeting. I have 9 siblings.
Wow.
But my one sister lives in Minnesota. So we got together and we said, what do we do? Luckily, my twin brother's wife, Patty, was the activities director at Del Mar Gardens. So she at least, you know, was able to give us some good information. But we had to get a game plan together. And at one point, I actually moved home for about 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
To keep an eye on my mom.
God love you.
Because a couple times, I used to go over there every day for lunch and drop off my laundry. I can't lie. Okay. So just put the laundry there. And I think she actually liked to do it because after having 10 kids, she was living by herself. At least I was telling myself that. But, you know, I went over one day and she left the chicken in the oven. And who knows how long that chicken was there. And we all started seeing little things. So we eventually decided, okay, we have to take her car. And, you know,
that's a big one.
That was huge.
Yeah.
She was losing her independence. She couldn't just go up to Schnucks or back then the Crestwood Mall to go walk the mall. And then we had to take her house. That was a horrible, horrible day. She actually, little Irish lady, nicest lady ever, but don't tick her off. She was screaming at us, and we're carrying her furniture out. So we stored her furniture. She lived with my brother and my sister-in-law. God bless them. And then it came time we had to put her into a facility. And she actually had to go to the psychiatric ward at St. Louis University because they say one of the worst times is when the dementia is crossing over to Alzheimer's because they know something's going on.
And they're pissed.
Yes. And funny story. So I went to visit her in the psych ward, and I sat down and had dinner with everyone, and one person just leaned over and took the other person's dinner, and then one person got up and started taking his clothes off and all this, and my mom grabs me and whispers, and you think I'm crazy?
She's going to run that place.
So then we moved her into actually Del Mar Gardens assisted living, and then she eventually was in the Alzheimer's ward, and you know, I, you and I just discussed where your mom is right now and what's going on. And, you know, it's
like, I got to tell you a story before you move on from the geriatric psych unit. My dad spent a weekend there. And you're absolutely right. When my dad finally went into sort of the oblivion stage, he didn't know anyone or anything. He was happy. He was peaceful. Getting into that stage was hell for us, and especially for him. And I'll never forget this as long as I live. He was in the geriatric psych unit at St. Anthony's in Alton. And he was in a Jerry chair, which is basically like a straitjacket chair. And he was biting on a wash rag and growling. And my dad had these ice blue Paul Newman eyes. And he stopped and he dropped it out of his mouth. And he looked up at me and he goes, Dave, this has to be a nightmare. He was there.
Wow.
He was 100% there. And I said, I know, Dad. And he went right back into it. It's like the clouds parted for like 10 seconds.
Wow.
And you got it. And you got the real idea that somewhere in there, he's there.
Yeah.
And he knows what's going on.
Well, you know, like, I remember it was still my mom, but it was somebody different. And it was, I ended up being her boyfriend for 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
My brothers were jealous.
I was his brother.
My six brothers were jealous. Like, why not me?
What's wrong with me?
But then we figured out I looked the most like my dad.
Oh.
And then she was bragging to the nurses, oh, that's my boyfriend. I mean, she was like giddy. She was like a high school girl. And she would say, where do you live? And I said, well, I live in the Francis Park area. What thoroughfare? So that's the road, not street. What thoroughfare? Because she grew up right near Botanical Garden and all that. But I still remember the day that she forgot who I was. Brutal. Because I'd walk in and it would take her a while. But then the one day I walked in and I was like, hi, Mom. She goes, who are you? Oh, yeah. I got to tell you.
Yeah.
But it's not about you. It's about them. So you had to play whatever character they wanted you to play that day. Yeah. It's just.
And it's so frustrating, isn't it? Because I'm going through this with my mom now. You never know what to push back on and what to go along with. And when I've kind of landed on, and my son Nick, who goes a lot, has landed on, when it's fanciful, like, did you spend the night at your grandma and grandpa's house last night? I'll say yes or no. But if it's something like, you're trying to take all my money or something like that, you have to push back and say, or these nurses, they're all after me. You have to say, no, Mom, they're here to take care of you. They're good people.
Well, there's so many undulations with it. You come in one day and they're happy. The next day, they're pissed off.
Yeah.
It was just so tough. You know, and then when she would talk about her childhood and all that, and like, are we going to the show Friday night? And I would say, yeah, but you know, we'll go to the show. Did you call my daddy? Does my daddy know we're going and all that?
Yeah.
And at times you have to laugh.
And isn't it crazy how my dad didn't know who he was? He didn't know what he had for breakfast, no idea who I was. But if I said, tell me about your best friend on your ship in the Navy, everything.
That's amazing. So my mom, one time, it was my aunt came in, and it was her sister, and my aunt sits down, and the three of us are just sitting down next to each other, and my mom looks at me, and she says, are you going to tell her, or am I? So I go, you tell her. She goes, Kak, we're getting married. And my aunt busted out laughing, and my mom goes, what's so funny? She goes, Ginny, that's your son, Brian. She goes, what?
He's been lying to me this whole time.
So I went over, and for anyone whose parents, grandparents, or somebody in their family has dementia, a couple of things. One, try to get a routine. Okay? Try to get a routine. That helps a lot because they're going to just forget stuff. Put up pictures all over, whether they're at home or in some facility. Put up pictures. And enjoy every good moment, because there's going to be way more bad moments. So I went over and I got a picture, and it was a picture of all 10 kids with their spouses.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have a spouse at the time, so I brought the picture to her, and I said, that's me. And she couldn't wrap her head around it, that, you know, that I'm her son.
Yeah.
And that's...
It must be, my mom's at the stage where she's angry. But she knows enough, and she'll say, this is so frustrating because, and she said this the other day, she said, this is so real for me. And last night I had a dream about an alien invasion, and it was so real. It was so detailed. It was so, I can see it in my mind right now. And in that dream, had someone walked up to me and said, hey, you're dreaming, I'd have been like, you're crazy. We need to deal with this alien invasion.
Can't you see this?
And that has to be how it is.
We sang happy birthday to her one time, 7 times in a row. We all sang happy birthday. The cake was there, and she smiled, and then we had a conversation, and about 45 seconds later, is it my birthday?
Yeah.
7 times in a row. And then the 8th time, we all, I mean, and, you know, we're all laughing by now, and she goes, did you already sing to me? Now, see, that was a great moment, though.
Yeah.
But no, it's tough. There isn't a playbook for it. And like I said, man, just enjoy every moment that you can.
Were you guys pretty united, the siblings?
Yes, 100%. That was the best part. And I was single. Well, I still am, but I could go help her. I would drop anything to go over there. And I really miss going to see her every day then, even though the ending was horrible.
Yeah.
But I really, like, I can't drive by any Delmar Gardens without crying.
Oh, I bet.
Good movie club to watch. I think it's called Still Alice, 2014.
I haven't been able to watch it.
Julianne Moore, who is smoking hot still. Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
Kristen Stewart, and she's a professor, and she gets Alzheimer's, and she has to break it to her adult kids, and then the story takes off from there. But I'm telling you, get a box of Kleenexes, yeah. But there's so much truth to that movie.
Are you like me? Every time you brain fart, you're like, here we go.
Yes.
Here it is.
Yes. We have so many similarities, it's scary. When you start talking about yourself, I'm like, am I that messed up?
Am I Glover level? Yes.
Or are you two guys the normal ones?
Right.
Oh, I never thought of it that way.
Yeah. Did you have to deal like with the sundowning? And
yes.
Yeah.
And I never believed that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
My sister-in-law, Patty, was saying she's going to start to sundown. She explained what it was, and it happened. It's just, there's, you know... It was sad seeing the very end, though. That was the worst part, you know, when she went crazy, basically.
Yeah.
And you'd go into, and she's like, not recognize you at all and say, get out of here and all that. And you just have to, you just leave then.
Yeah.
Because if you stay there, you're aggravating her.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. You really do have to live in their world. Like, one of the hardest things for me when my dad really needed, because I was over here and they were in Illinois. So my sister and my brother and my mom really did 90% of the heavy lifting. But they called me and they said he really needs to go to a facility and he's refusing. So I came over and he thought I was his brother, Jimmy. And he was, and I'll never forget this. We sat on a swing, you know, like a little porch swing. And he said, I'm putting all my trust in you, Jimmy. If you think I should go to this place, I'll go. But only because you say so. You're like, oh,
wow.
Like it was all on, and it wasn't all on my shoulders, but he put it all on my shoulders. And then when I would see him sometimes, he's like, I don't know about that advice you gave me.
Was he like being funny about
that? No,
like, no. Okay, so no. Like just doubting.
No, he really, in his world... I was his brother.
Okay.
And I had given him a bum steer.
Oh, and man.
And now I was not to be trusted.
Ugh.
So tough. And then, as you know, when you finally lose them, you've already lost them so many times.
Yes. Yes. And so what I do is, Mother's Day is always tough. And as much as I tell myself on Saturday, she's in a better place, wherever that is, whatever you believe in. And I wake up Sunday morning, I have my coffee, and I'm like, everything's great. And I'll just start crying. Yeah. And then I put on the Oprah tape from when I surprised her on the Oprah show.
I remember that.
And that always, it's a great cry then.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good cry. So.
Jeez.
And then, you've been playing Beatles all.
Yeah.
Okay. In My Life.
Yes.
Okay. That was her funeral song. I picked it. And I gave her eulogy.
Man.
Wow.
That's tough. I don't know if I have that in me.
Luckily, we had three because we had, well, at that point, she had like 38 grandchildren. So three, like one grand, two boys, two brothers, and then a grandchild gave the eulogy. So we split it up into three.
That's cool. That's super cool. Yeah, my mom will be 97 in September. She has a great-great-grandchild.
Wow.
Yeah, six generations.
That's nuts.
It's nuts, isn't it? Just so crazy. What's your best advice other than keeping a routine? And being flexible.
How about this? Visit, if you know, obviously they're going to have to go somewhere.
Yeah.
Visit them all the time because there's going to be a day you're not going to be able to visit.
Yeah. And I'm going through it now. I go once a day, most days twice. And it hurts when you see them. They're like, I haven't seen you in weeks. You're like, I saw you 4 hours ago.
Right.
Like on Sunday, she called three times. You know, they'd call Bethesda and they'd say, your mom's having a hard time. I'd go back and it'd be like, I've been calling for you. I haven't seen you in weeks. I'm like, I didn't even get out of my car. And you get a little pissed and then you just have to check it. You know, I remember my mom getting mad at my dad. And there's enough of my mom still there. I'll say, like, remember when this was happening to dad? And how you felt. And I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy.
And the employees at those facilities are
angels,
saints. They really are. One time, she was talking about something. I could tell she didn't really know who I was. So she said, how do I know you? And I said, did you have a husband named Glenn? And she lit up. She
goes, wow.
Yes. And I said, I think you had 10 kids. She goes, I did. So I took her through
That's
every
smart.
Kid. And we got to the end. I said, and your last two were twins, right? She goes, yes. And I go, Brian and Kevin? She goes, yes. And she goes, oh, that Kevin was so nice. And I went, here it comes. Here it comes. And she says, that Brian was such a smart ass.
Oh, no.
I swear to God. You know how proud I was at that moment.
That's awesome. That's great. Good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you. Thank you for having me in.
Thanks for coming.
I really
in.
Appreciate it.
426 DGS. So, Rach, you had some positive movement on potholes?
Yeah, I was very encouraged to see that in two parts of the city, so it's not like it was just, you know, a one-and-done type of thing, but some potholes that I came across every day on my drives to and from work have been filled in.
Nice.
So, yeah, that's really exciting.
Oh, potholes.
How about Tucker, though?
Yeah.
I avoid Tucker.
Yeah.
There's one down toward Olive and 20th-ish that, and I'm in a Rubicon. Rubicons climb mountains.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're meant for that.
It shakes my teeth.
Ugh.
And I seem to hit it every day. And I get pister and pister every day.
I really look out for them because they're not fun.
What was the deal with Dartmouth? What happened?
Oh, yeah. So, interesting. So, it's based on the campus protests. And a part of this was the Dartmouth student government, they had a vote as to whether or not they were going to give a vote of no confidence to the president for how they handled the protests. So they did a public vote, like raise your hand if you support the vote of no confidence. And it was like 13-2 in favor with a couple of people, you know, in absentia. And then they did it officially on the secret ballot and the measure failed 8-9.
Wow.
With a couple of people in absentia. And what was interesting about it is the people that changed their vote were just afraid to be singled out for voting no, because they felt like they would be doxxed, they would be harassed if it was on public record that they voted no against the vote of no confidence. In other words, they didn't think the president did anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The president of the university did anything wrong.
But they didn't want people coming after them.
But they didn't want people coming after them. So, we talk a lot about, you know, the covering of the faces and people that are worried about repercussions. Well, the people that also vote their conscience in a different way have those same fears. And it's fascinating, you know, and it's almost like wondering why we would even bother doing those raise your hand votes if we know that the peer pressure is going to be a part of it. Why not just do the secret ballots all along?
Yeah.
It's why we do a secret ballot for all of our voting.
Sure.
How many people would admit up front? Now, some people would probably wear a bumper sticker on their chest. Others don't want everybody to know what who they're voting for and why.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we have the secret ballot process. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to put your name and anything to that. You're never going to be held accountable for whatever your beliefs are.
Yeah, I think there's a huge phantom vote both ways.
I think
there are people who pound their chest about Trump and then don't. I think there are a lot more people who go off on Trump and then secretly vote for.
Right, because they like
because
whatever.
They like whatever.
Tax policy, whatever
yep.
it is. Yeah.
Yep. I really do. We saw something interesting today. I hesitate to say this because I don't want it to be offensive to anyone. Like, can you believe this? But there is a homeless guy who is pushing a grocery cart full of homeless guy stuff. And you could tell that he was a pro, that he was ready. He had a ton of accoutrement. And then we got right next to him, and I noticed that he had a laptop. And it was opened up, and he was, like, clicking around on it. I'm like, well, how about that? Yeah.
Would not have expected
no.
that.
Yeah, it was definitely
I wasn't expecting him to
sight.
Say a laptop.
No.
I was almost thinking, oh, I was thinking of a flip phone.
And it was as if he had Wi-Fi. He was just pushing this cart down the thing, and he was just, like, chomping on eBay. What are they always doing? 439 DGS on KMOX. Wheels, let's do a little preview of the Cardinals and the Brewers. First, though, I want to ask you, because I'm kind of fascinated by the Jackson Holliday story.
Yeah.
And he was like the number one guy and then kind of crapped the bed once he got up to the big leagues and then got sent back down. We know what happened with Walker. We know what happened with Victor Scott. I'm guessing it's like anything else. There's an art to it. There's a science to it. And then there's just luck to it, right?
And some of it is just time, you know, I mean, like, and so like when it happens, this is one of my complaints about fandoms in general is most sets of sports fans. So you follow your team, but you don't follow the sport as closely. Right. So you might be a huge baseball fan, but let's say 95% of your time following baseball is the Cardinals. Well, then you start to think that the things that are happening to them are not happening everywhere else.
Good point.
When you're the kind of dork that I am, and I also came up covering baseball nationally before I ever covered it locally, I don't look at the game as about one team. I'm looking at 30 teams. What are the things that are happening? It's the same thing we talked about with the Contreras injury and catchers that are moving up to make that pitch. So Jackson Holliday came up, number one prospect in baseball. Still is ranked the number one prospect in all of baseball. Number one overall draft pick out of high school, right? Like, son of Matt Holliday. His uncle is the head coach at Oklahoma State. His grandfather has been a head coach in college ranks and raised a major leaguer. Like, he's got baseball all up and down his bloodlines. And he got up for the first time and he failed. It was bad for him. He wasn't ready. And that happens sometimes. It happened with Jordan Walker last year, and he's still not ready. Jordan Walker would still be a junior in college if he had gone the college route. He's 21.
Wow.
I mean, so and at the age of 21, Aaron Judge was still in college, was still playing at San Diego State. I think it was San Diego State. But he wasn't doing much. The question about Aaron Judge then was, is he ever going to hit enough home runs? Because he's big and strong and he hits the ball hard, but he didn't hit the ball in the air. Well, he was 21 figuring that out in college and then got drafted and spent another couple of years working out in the minor leagues. So we lose that perspective. And, you know, with Jackson Holliday, when he got sent down, it was national baseball news. Like, MLB Network was talking about it. It was a big deal because it's the number one prospect. But he's back in AAA. He's getting his feet under him. He's starting to go good again.
Is there anything collaborative with the players about that? Like, hey, Holliday, we're thinking about bringing you up. You feel ready? You ready to go?
Oh, no. No, they're not going to do that.
It's just...
No, it's going to be their evaluation of you. Like, are you doing things? What are you doing? And then also, what does the team need, right? If the team needs him to needs an infielder, well, that's the guy that they would look at versus an outfielder or whatever. But no, it's totally... They're going on their own independent evaluation of a player and on what the batted ball numbers are telling them or the defense. So they're looking at all kinds of metrics, all kinds of analytics, and they're using the eye test to say, is this guy ready?
So take us around the field with the Cardinals and who's doing well, who's struggling.
I mean, well, the guy that was doing the best is hurt now. So Wilson Contreras was your best offensive player until he got hurt, and now you're going to need other people to step up. And by the way, Paul Goldschmidt's not in the lineup tonight. Getting a day off to start off. And that's notable because it's the start of an important series against Milwaukee. So clearly he needs a break. I think he might be best served giving him a couple of days, 2 or 3 days off, maybe just rest, do some extra batting practice, whatever.
Having a trained eye, what is your best guess with Goldschmidt?
He's just caught in between. He's not been able to catch up to the fastball, and then he's cheating on the fastball occasionally, and then he's getting beat on a breaking pitch that normally wouldn't beat him. A lot of times you can watch a hitter and you can tell when they're chasing success. They're not taking what's there. They're not doing what they normally do, which is have a game plan, execute that game plan, and go from there. They start to get anxious. They start to swing at things they wouldn't normally swing at. You've seen that with Goldie a little bit, but he's also taking a lot of pitches that he shouldn't take. I've seen him take some.
I've noticed that.
Like 92 straight down the middle. Like that's a ball he hits into the bleachers.
Yeah.
But he's caught in between. And most problems with hitters are mental. I would say, I don't even know what the number is, but it's at least 2/3.
You can feel it, can't you?
You can just look at body language. You can look at how, like, did you see the strikeout the other night to end the game? He chased a pitch that was, and that's not unusual in baseball today, but it's unusual for him because he's a guy that's always been really good at swing decisions. And when you start to press and you start to chase, I don't just mean out of the zone, but you start to chase success, where you know you're behind and you're really getting desperate, you start to make mistakes you don't normally make. Well, that just compounds the thing.
Yeah.
And it's easy to see it. It's hard to fix it. Just like anything else that has to do with what's going on between your ears.
So Mason Wynn was batting like .374, and now he's come back down to earth.
Yeah, he's been slumping. But I'll tell you this. There was a Derek Gould tweeted it, but he ranks second amongst all shortstops in Major League Baseball defensively when it comes to defensive runs saved, which is a really good catch-all metric. So he is doing a tremendous job defensively. But, yeah, he's not been hitting here for a little bit. Alec Burleson's been going better of late, which is partly why he's in there. He's playing first base instead of Paul Goldschmidt. Now we got to see what's going to happen with catcher, though. You know, does Herrera start to hit better again if he's getting more at-bats? Or does that?
He was doing well there for a while.
He did, but then he got more at-bats, and it started to expose him a little bit. And Pajes is not as known for his hitting, but he's known as a great defender. So be interesting to see how they weigh all of that out as they go, too.
How about the outfield?
I mean, Dylan Carlson's playing again tonight. He's going to get a chance to play every day, I think, until you get Tommy Edman back, because they don't have anybody else.
Which we have no timeline for.
No, we still don't have any idea on Tommy Edman. It's just kind of wait and see. Siani's playing again tonight. You're going to get defense, but no offense from him. Donovan will play left. He's not tonight. Newt Barr will be in left. They need Newt Barr to get going. Outside of Goldschmidt and Arenado, Gorman, Newt Barr, and Donovan have to hit.
Yes.
They have to. They are not as established as Gorman and Arenado, but they are as important to this team's production.
They should be 275 guys.
I'm not a batting average guy, but yeah, roughly. It's to me, it's a lot more about the total. You need power from Gorman. You need on base from Donovan and Newt Barr. If those guys start doing that, it's going to help. And they need to start facing some of the pressure, too, because a lot of it's been on Arenado and Goldie. Arenado's been gradually getting better, but they need those three guys for sure.
Quickly, pitching?
Be interesting. Sonny Gray gets to go tonight, so it's a good way to start the series. After that, I don't think they've decided, but Lance Lynn's been good. Good. To me, the biggest concern is Miles Mikolas. Miles Mikolas and then the open spot that Matt's vacated. It's going to be a little dicey here for a bit.
453 DGS. Man, Kristi Noem will not stop kicking the dog turd.
What's she doing now?
She tweeted out, "For everyone who absolutely lost their minds about my decision to shoot a dog 20 years ago, I hope you don't eat cows or pigs or chickens. At least I have the guts to look in the eyes of the animal I'm killing."
Why is it always about, like, guts? Like, I'm tough. Like, no, you're just mean. That's a mean thing.
I find it weird that she presumably, like, had that thought at 3 a.m. 2 weeks after the initial scandal and was like, oh, here's a good one. Like, let me put out the tweet. It's just kind of weird. Like, maybe you should have said that immediately after the backlash. But at this point, it's like,
I know there are different ways to handle scandals, which we've seen a lot over the past 10 years. But it seems to me that one strategy that people don't use is just be quiet.
Right.
Just be quiet for a while. Maybe go away. Take a couple innings off.
Maybe don't make up stories about meeting Kim Jong-un.
Just, yeah. I mean, when you're...
As a what? A governor of South Dakota?
Right, like, yeah. How would that have happened? That's such a good point.
Yeah, people have such a... They get their dander up. And they don't want to be wrong, even if they kind of somewhere know that they're wrong, and they just want to fight back. But it's sort of the Streisand effect, you know, that if you hear Kristi Noem shot her dog, most people are going to be like somewhere between ick and outraged. But then it's not the biggest thing that happened in your day.
Right.
You're going to move on.
Right.
But then if you go to your Twitter and you see her saying things like, I'm the one with the guts to shoot dogs, you're like, man.
And it's always about that. Like, I'm tough. Sure you are.
You're right.
You're real tough with a gun and a dog. Doesn't make you tough or mean. I mean, it just makes you mean and inconsiderate.
And it was a bad 1-2 punch with the dog shooting and the Kim Jong-un thing.
Yeah, that was unfortunate.
Well, then you
get
on TV, and when it's time to be tough, you wither. You don't say, you know what? Yeah, I don't know why I did that. I screwed up.
And according to Megyn Kelly, she has too much Botox and extensions.
Apparently so.
The trifecta.
Speaking of mean.
439 DGS on KMOX. Wheels, let's do a little preview of the Cardinals and the Brewers. First, though, I want to ask you, because I'm kind of fascinated by the Jackson Holliday story.
Yeah.
And he was like the number one guy and then kind of crapped the bed once he got up to the big leagues and then got sent back down. We know what happened with Walker. We know what happened with Victor Scott. I'm guessing it's like anything else. There's an art to it. There's a science to it. And then there's just luck to it, right?
And some of it is just time, you know, I mean, like, and so like when it happens, this is one of my complaints about fandoms in general is most sets of sports fans. So you follow your team, but you don't follow the sport as closely, right? So you might be a huge baseball fan, but let's say 95% of your time following baseball is the Cardinals. Well, then you start to think that the things that are happening to them are not happening everywhere else.
Good point.
When you're the kind of dork that I am, and I also came up covering baseball nationally before I ever covered it locally, I don't look at the game as about one team. I'm looking at 30 teams. What are the things that are happening? It's the same thing we talked about with the Contreras injury and catchers that are moving up to make that pitch. So Jackson Holliday came up, number one prospect in baseball, still is ranked the number one prospect in all of baseball, number one overall draft pick out of high school, right? Like, son of Matt Holliday. His uncle is the head coach at Oklahoma State. His grandfather has been a head coach in college ranks and raised a major leaguer. Like, he's got baseball all up and down his bloodlines. And he got up for the first time and he failed. He struck. It was bad for him. He wasn't ready. And that happens sometimes. It happened with Jordan Walker last year, and he's still not ready. Jordan Walker would still be a junior in college if he had gone the college route. He's 21.
Wow.
I mean, so, and at the age of 21, Aaron Judge was still in college, was still playing at San Diego State. I think it was San Diego State. But he wasn't doing much. Like the question about Aaron Judge then was, is he ever going to hit enough home runs? Because he's big and strong and he hits the ball hard, but he didn't hit the ball in the air. Well, he was 21 figuring that out in college and then got drafted and spent another couple of years working out in the minor leagues. So we lose that perspective. And, you know, with Jackson Holliday, when he got sent down, it was national baseball news. Like MLB Network was talking about it. It was a big deal because it's the number one prospect. But he's back in AAA. He's getting his feet under him. He's starting to go
Is
good
there
again.
Anything collaborative with the players about that? Like, hey, Holliday, we're thinking about bringing you up. You feel ready? You ready to go?
Oh, no. No, they're not going to do that.
It's just.
No, it's going to be their evaluation of you. Like, are you doing things? What are you doing? And then also, what does the team need, right? If the team needs him to needs an infielder, well, that's the guy that they would look at versus an outfielder or whatever. But no, it's totally, they're going on their own independent evaluation of a player and on what the batted ball numbers are telling them or the defense. So they're looking at all kinds of metrics, all kinds of analytics, and they're using the eye test to say, is this guy ready?
So take us around the field with the Cardinals and who's doing well, who's struggling.
I mean, well, the guy that was doing the best is hurt now. So Wilson Contreras was your best offensive player until he got hurt, and now you're going to need other people to step up. And by the way, Paul Goldschmidt's not in the lineup tonight, getting a day off to start off. And that's notable because it's the start of an important series against Milwaukee. So clearly he needs a break. I think he might be best served giving him a couple of days, 2 or 3 days off, maybe just rest, do some extra batting practice, whatever.
Having a trained eye. What is your best guess with Goldschmidt?
He's just caught in between. He's not been able to catch up to the fastball, and then he's cheating on the fastball occasionally, and then he's getting beat on a breaking pitch that normally wouldn't beat him. So, you know, a lot of times you can watch a hitter, and you can tell when they're chasing success. They're not taking what's there. They're not doing what they normally do, which is have a game plan, execute that game plan, and go from there. They start to get anxious. They start to swing at things they wouldn't normally swing at. You've seen that with Goldie a little bit, but he's also taking a lot of pitches that he shouldn't take. I've seen him take some.
I've noticed that.
Like 92 straight down the middle. Like that's a ball he hits into the bleachers.
Yeah.
But he's caught in between. And most problems with hitters are mental. I would say, I don't even know what the number is, but it's at least 2/3.
You can feel it, can't you?
You can just look at body language. You can look at how, like, did you see the strikeout the other night to end the game? He chased a pitch that was, you know, and that's not unusual in baseball today, but it's unusual for him because he's a guy that's always been really good at swing decisions. And when you start to press and you start to chase, I don't just mean out of the zone, but you start to chase success where you know you're behind and you're really getting desperate. You start to make mistakes you don't normally make. Well, that just compounds the thing.
Yeah.
And it's easy to see it. It's hard to fix it. Just like anything else that has to do with what's going on between your ears.
So Mason Wynn was batting like .374, and now he's come back down to earth.
Yeah, he's been slumping, but I'll tell you this. There was a Derek Gould tweeted it, but he ranks second amongst all shortstops in Major League Baseball defensively when it comes to defensive runs saved, which is a really good catch-all metric. So he is doing a tremendous job defensively. But yeah, he's not been hitting here for a little bit. Alec Burleson's been going better of late, which is partly why he's in there. He's playing first base instead of Paul Goldschmidt. Now we got to see what's going to happen with catcher, though. You know, does Herrera start to hit better again if he's getting more at-bats? Or does that?
He was doing well there for a while.
He did, but then he got more at-bats, and it started to expose him a little bit. And Pajes is not as known for his hitting, but he's known as a great defender. So be interesting to see how they weigh all of that out as they go, too.
How about the outfield?
I mean, Dylan Carlson's playing again tonight. He's going to get a chance to play every day, I think, until you get Tommy Edman back because they don't have anybody else.
Which we have no timeline for.
No, we still don't have any idea on Tommy Edman. It's just kind of wait and see. Siani's playing again tonight. You're going to get defense, but no offense from him. Donovan will play left. He's not tonight. Newt Barr will be in left. They need Newt Barr to get going. Outside of Goldschmidt and Arenado, Gorman, Newt Barr, and Donovan have to hit.
Yes.
They have to. They are not as established as Gorman and Arenado, but they are as important to this team's production.
They should be .275 guys.
I'm not a batting average guy, but yeah, roughly. It's to me, it's a lot more about the total. Like you need power from Gorman. You need on base from Donovan and Nootbaar. If those guys start doing that, it's going to help. And they need to start facing some of the pressure too, because a lot of it's been on Arenado and Goldie. Arenado's been gradually getting better, but they need those three guys for sure.
Quickly, pitching?
It'll be interesting. Sonny Gray gets to go tonight, so it's a good way to start the series. After that, I don't think they've decided, but Lance Lynn's been good. Good. To me, the biggest concern is Miles Michaelis. Miles Michaelis and then the open spot that Matt's vacated. It's going to be a little dicey here for a bit.
453 DGS. Man, Christy Noem will not stop kicking the dog turd.
What's she doing now?
She tweeted out, "For everyone who absolutely lost their minds about my decision to shoot a dog 20 years ago, I hope you don't eat cows or pigs or chickens. At least I have the guts to look in the eyes of the animal I'm killing."
Why is it always about, like, guts? Like, I'm tough. Like, no, you're just mean. That's a mean thing.
I find it weird that she presumably, like, had that thought at 3 a.m. 2 weeks after the initial scandal and was like, oh, here's a good one. Like, let me put out the tweet. It's just kind of weird. Like, maybe you should have said that immediately after the backlash. But at this point, it's like,
I know there are different ways to handle scandals, which we've seen a lot over the past 10 years. But it seems to me that one strategy that people don't use is just be quiet.
Right.
Just be quiet for a while. Maybe go away. Take a couple innings off.
Maybe don't make up stories about meeting Kim Jong-un.
I mean, when you're...
As a governor of South Dakota?
Right, like, yeah. How would that have happened? That's such a good point.
Yeah, people have such a... They get their dander up, and they don't want to be wrong, even if they kind of somewhere know that they're wrong, and they just want to fight back. But it's sort of the Streisand effect, you know, that if you hear Christy Noem shot her dog, most people are going to be like somewhere between ick and outraged. But then it's not the biggest thing that happened in your day.
Right.
You're going to move on.
Right.
But then if you go to your Twitter and you see her saying things like, I'm the one with the guts to shoot dogs, you're like, man.
And it's always about that. Like, I'm tough. Sure you are.
You're right.
You're real tough with a gun and a dog. Doesn't make you tough or mean. I mean, it just makes you mean and inconsiderate.
And it was a bad 1-2 punch with the dog shooting and the Kim Jong-un thing.
Yeah, that was unfortunate.
Well, then you get on TV, and when it's time to be tough, you wither. You don't say, you know what? Yeah, I don't know why I did that. I screwed up.
And according to Megyn Kelly, she has too much Botox and extensions.
Apparently so.
The trifecta.
Speaking of mean.
53 DGS. Man, Christy Noem will not stop kicking the dog turd.
What's she doing now?
She tweeted out, "For everyone who absolutely lost their minds about my decision to shoot a dog 20 years ago, I hope you don't eat cows or pigs or chickens. At least I have the guts to look in the eyes of the animal I'm killing."
Why is it always about, like, guts? Like, I'm tough. Like, no, you're just mean. That's a mean thing.
I find it weird that she presumably, like, had that thought at 3 a.m. 2 weeks after the initial scandal and was like, oh, here's a good one. Like, let me put out the tweet. It's just kind of weird. Like, maybe you should have said that immediately after the backlash. But at this point, it's like,
I know there are different ways to handle scandals, which we've seen a lot over the past 10 years. But it seems to me that one strategy that people don't use is just be quiet.
Right.
Just be quiet for a while. Maybe go away. Take a couple innings off.
Maybe don't make up stories about meeting Kim Jong-un.
I mean, when you...
As a governor of South Dakota?
Right. Like, yeah. How would that have happened? That's such a good point.
Yeah. People have such a... They get their dander up, and they don't want to be wrong, even if they kind of somewhere know that they're wrong, and they just want to fight back. But it's sort of the Streisand effect, you know, that if you hear Christy Noem shot her dog, most people are going to be like somewhere between ick and outraged. But then it's not the biggest thing that happened in your day.
Right.
You're going to move on.
Right.
But then if you go to your Twitter and you see her saying things like, I'm the one with the guts to shoot dogs, you're like, man.
And it's always about that. Like, I'm tough. Sure you are.
You're right.
You're real tough with a gun and a dog. Doesn't make you tough or mean. I mean, it just makes you mean and inconsiderate.
And it was a bad 1-2 punch with the dog shooting and the Kim Jong-un thing.
Yeah, that was unfortunate.
Well, then you get on TV, and when it's time to be tough, you wither. You don't say, you know what? Yeah, I don't know why I did that. I screwed up.
And according to Megyn Kelly, she has too much Botox and extensions.
Oh my goodness.
Apparently so.
The trifecta.
Speaking of mean.